Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke. It's a real pleasure to have with us today Carthage College President John Swallow and University of Wisconsin Parkside Chancellor Debbie Ford. Dr. Swallow joined Carthage about a year and a half ago as its 23rd president. Before accepting the leadership role at Carthage, President Swallow had been provost and executive vice president at University of the South in Suwanee, Tennessee. Chancellor Ford, who is in her 10th year at UW Parkside, previously served as Vice President of Student Affairs for the University of West Florida in Pensacola. Chancellor Ford, President Swallow, welcome to Parkside today.
Well, John, thank you for having us, and I am really grateful that one of my newer colleagues, President John Swallow, is joining us on Parkside today, and very happy that he is part of our community here in Southeast Wisconsin.
Thank you, John and Debbie. I'm delighted to be here with you.
So as we head into December, and considering that both of you came to Wisconsin from warmer states, did you know about Wisconsin winters before you made your decisions?
My parents are from outside Chicago, so I remember when I was growing up in South Carolina that they would tell me about the snow, although we never seemed to visit the grandparents in the winter. We would only visit in the summer.
Right.
And I've had a few more relatives who stayed around Chicago. So I knew something, but, you know, there's nothing like living through it yourself. So last winter was, yes, cold, but I would say not nearly as cold as everyone threatened that it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and so we had four seasons there, but I would say four more equalized seasons, whereas here winter just seems to start early and and continue well into spring. But I have to say this year is a little different. I've seen way too much snow before November 20th than I really like. So hoping that maybe we'll have a little winter in November, and then as December and January come, maybe early spring, can we hope?
I think we can hope. Besides the seasons and the winter and the cold and the warm, what was it about the opportunities for each of you that that motivated you to pursue your respective positions?
Well, I've spent my career in small private colleges, and after spending time back at my alma mater in Suwanee as an administrator, I was looking for another opportunity, and so looking primarily at small private colleges, but not really with a regional emphasis. Our kids were out of the house. It seemed like a grand new adventure that could be possible. And so the fact that Carthage came up close to a kind of family home, although I had not lived near Chicago, a lot of my relatives had, was quite attractive, being on the lake. And also Carthage's history, it's very unusual for a small institution to move. And the fact that it was an institution of size now with 2,600 students, but had moved to Kenosha in the 60s from a small town in Illinois, just sounded like a great and attractive story. And it was also a story that I picked up on in the interview process of an institution that had thought periodically about what the world needed and how to provide it. So there are a lot of schools that tend to get stuck in one sort of education, and they only want to educate one sort of person. And Carthage had asked questions periodically and started educating women in 1870, which was unusual for private institutions, started educating students of color in the 1950s. And so the move to Kenosha was in that context for me. It was asking another question. Maybe the right place to be wasn't in Carthage, Illinois. It could be a place closer to more people who needed education, like Kenosha. So all those reasons, thought for me, made this an attractive opportunity.
Yeah, and as I hear John talk about that, I think it's about finding that right fit, I think, to make a difference and pay it forward in higher education. And I think both John and I have had rich careers and have worked at universities that are very focused and mindful of their mission. And when I was looking at UW Parkside, and now 10 years ago, because it was in December of 2008 when I first learned about UW Parkside, and from a colleague who's now the chancellor at the University of Wisconsin River Falls, he had been appointed as chancellor at UW-River Falls that fall, and he said, you know, I think you should take a look at this opportunity. And my first response was, Dean. They have winter in Wisconsin. But the more I remember grabbing the prospectus of the position and reading it as we drove from Pensacola to Kentucky for the holidays. And wow, I just couldn't put it down because I kept saying, wow, this institution, very intriguing. And I think the one thing that really stuck out for me and something that I believe in and have lived throughout my tenure here at UW-Parkside is serving first-generation college students. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that first attracted me to the university, and I continue to be inspired, and I'm not looking back, I'm just looking mm-hmm. forward at what we're accomplishing here together.
Now, President Swallow, you mentioned Carthage moving to the Kenosha area in the 1960s. UW-Parkside is chartered in 1965. Have either of you talked with community partners or members about maybe that time where here's two institutions of higher education both coming to Kenosha, Racine, southeastern Wisconsin at about the same time?
Well, I love to find out more local history and don't feel that I have found out nearly enough. So I know some of the story of Carthage coming, and I've talked to some of the people who helped to bring it here, or at least have heard some stories about them and their families. But I haven't put enough together. I would love to learn more about Parkside coming, about the connections between the two. I'm also interested in Kenosha and Racine and how they have worked together over time. And so I am anxious to find out more information from more community partners.
Yeah, I think as I hear community partners, they are very proud of the higher education institutions here in Southeast Wisconsin. So we're very fortunate. We have the institution that started technical education with Gateway mm-hmm. Technical College, right. I think 105 years.
Right.
And then you have an outstanding private college move from Carthage, Illinois mm-hmm. to Kenosha, Wisconsin in the mid-60s, correct? 1960?
Early 60s.
Right. And then, of course, UW-Parkside, it was the community leaders who said, okay, we have a technical college and we have a wonderful private college, but what about a public university as part of the UW that was four-year? Because we had the two-year centers, UW-Kenosha, mm-hmm. UW-Racine.
Right.
And so it's really the community who fought and I think led the effort to make sure that higher education opportunities were right here for our residents.
Mm-hmm.
And I give them all the credit. And they have such pride. I hear that. And on some of the economic development boards, when we think about Kenosha and Racine, I've heard folks in Kenosha say, we really are a college town.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
We have all three. We have three outstanding institutions of higher ed.
Right.
And it would be great to think more about how we can claim that identity when people come to visit, that we are a college town, that it seems like a college town, that they come because it's a college town, because we have a lot of students collectively.
That's right.
Right. And what else do you, being not from this area, what would you say you've learned about southeastern Wisconsin since you've arrived? President Swallow, a little bit less time here in the area to Chancellor Ford, but I'll start with you. What have you learned about the community? What impresses you about the area?
What impresses me is that culture of a place that has had some ups and downs,
mm-hmm.
but has had the ups and then has seen how the downs can come back to be ups.
Mm-hmm.
Some communities stay the same for a very long time. And so when I came here, hearing the story of Kenosha losing the auto plants and then deciding that it can come back and achieving that mm-hmm. is a great story to remind people about how there can be growth and development and how we need to be smart about it, but how community partners can come together to achieve things. And it's a different story, but it's a similar story in Racine where, you know, in the 50s and 60s, it was kind of a heyday, and Racine started some lovely traditions, some of which still exist today and very much impressed me. And yet there was a decline in manufacturing. But the memory of what can be is still there, and so you have people coming together and asking, so what do we need to do as the economy grows to bring it back? And so it's that sense of aspiration. It's not people sitting back, resting on their laurels, thinking, you know, everything's fine.
Right.
They're willing to come together and collaborate, but they also know that it can work. It's not just kind of a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's a belief. It's an honest belief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think for me, I think of two words, resiliency and collaboration. And I believe that both communities are resilient, and as President Swallow has said, have, you know, not only rebounded from the most recent recession and really thought about its identity and worked towards achieving that while maintaining the unique aspects that make the communities so rich in the culture that they have, mm-hmm. and that cultural identity. But I think thinking of beyond yesterday and really looking mm-hmm. to the future, and I think with all the economic growth here, and I believe companies and organizations choose to locate and are choosing to stay in Southeast Wisconsin. They mm-hmm. have selected mm-hmm. this place as a place to do business, as a place to raise their families, as a place to grow, I think because of the richness of the assets that we have, mm-hmm. right? I also think about collaboration, and I've been fortunate that I've been part of a number of groups across the community, and these are groups of education leaders, higher ed and K-12, government leaders, community leaders, economic development leaders, who have a passion to make sure that we maintain what is really, really strong and helps our community to maintain that cultural identity that we have, mm-hmm. but also to improve on those things that we know we can do better. And so it's not utopia, mm-hmm. but we can acknowledge what we need to work on, and we work towards that. And I am so, I guess, proud of our community leaders, because we have come together. And we often ask, okay, who's not here that needs to be here? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where us as higher education leaders, I think, can take a lead role. Universities and colleges are the place to convene mm-hmm. and a place to solve some of the most complex challenges and to really fully embrace the opportunities.
Right. You know, I think about the conversations or the presentations that I've heard from, let's say, a Todd Battle at CABA or Jenny Trick at RCEDC or Lou Molitor or Matt Montemiro, and they always talk about when they're talking about bringing businesses and organizations to the area, how important higher education and educational system in the region is to companies, organizations making that decision. So here, Southeastern Wisconsin, which over the past, let's say, 3 or 4 years has been growing economically at a very fast rate. What does that economic and community growth mean to each of you as leaders of higher education institutions?
Well, I think it goes in both directions. So first, like Chancellor Ford said, there's a real convening opportunity for faculty and staff and students at local higher education institutions to participate and facilitate those community conversations about how the growth might take place. But going the other way, having more organizations here, corporations, not-for-profits, government agencies that are growing and have a need for new workers means that it's an excellent opportunity for local higher education institutions who are so close to them and understand what they will need to be in conversation with them about how the education programs we already provide might suit perfectly, or we have an opportunity to be in an early stage conversation about how there may be new programs that we could offer, or certificates, or something along the way, co-curricularly, that will enable us to provide the educated folks they need to grow their organization. So if we were higher education institutions far away from such organizations, we would be playing catch up a lot.
Right.
But the fact that we're very close and we can be in contact means that we have great opportunities for growing our universities.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about that question about the growth and how that influences UW-Parkside and Carthage College, I really do think about the partnerships that exist, but the partnerships that we have the opportunity to create. And as I'm out in the community meeting with our nonprofit partners and our corporation and industry leaders, they often talk about the partnerships that they already have with higher education. They are looking to us to educate and prepare this next generation of talent. Mm-hmm. And not just talent, but talented leaders. They will be those who will serve in the leadership roles of all the organizations. Right. And it just gives me great pride, because they're looking to our institutions mm-hmm. to prepare these graduates, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, that both Carthage and UW-Parkside do is we are a place for quality of life. Mm-hmm. There is something mm-hmm. happening on our campuses all the time for the community.
Right.
So if I'm a business and looking to how do I create opportunities for my employees, I'm saying there's a richness of things to do at both Carthage College and UW-Parkside, from athletics and the arts and lectures, and in really encouraging our employees to get engaged, because they do live in a college community. Mm-hmm. We are a college town.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it gets any better than that. And our institutions are very accessible. So I think we will grow. I think both of our institutions mm-hmm. will grow,
mm-hmm.
but not just in numbers, but we will grow in our significance and relevance to the community.
And both of you are involved with a new initiative, a collaboration with other institutions of higher education in southeastern Wisconsin, the Higher Education Regional Alliance, or HERA. More than 175,000 students are enrolled in higher education institutions in southeastern Wisconsin. Is this collaboration unique to our area?
I believe that there are more regional collaboratives today emerging. We know that our friends in the Fox Valley, they have a group called New Era, and they formed many years ago. And out of that, they aligned with economic development and developed some curricular pathways that were joint between the two-year and the four-year sector.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have three broad goals with the Higher Ed Regional Alliance. One is to increase educational attainment. That means more folks with credentials, certificates, two-year and four-year degrees,
mm-hmm.
and advanced degrees. Alignment with our curriculum and how might we do things together, and closer alignment with what the business and industry says it needs. And then the third goal is how do we make sure that our partners that are hiring our graduates know of the great talent that we have and mm-hmm. we are producing, because it's frustrating to hear that folks say they can't find talent when we have 176,000 students enrolled in higher education.
Right.
So they are here. And so what do we do to, I guess, nurture and cultivate those relationships so they choose our institutions before going outside of the region?
Mm-hmm. And what have some of the initial meetings, the HERA meetings, been like? What are the conversations like when you talk with other higher education leaders in the region?
I think initially there's a little bit of wariness. Really, are we going to do this? Are we going to have publics and privates sitting down? Should we be worried? But it wasn't only we. Then we started having folks from local Strive Together organizations, the organizations that were thinking about social and economic issues in each of the counties.
Mm-hmm.
What goals did they have? What metrics did they have? And there was a willingness after the initial question to say, okay, so what if we all started to share data? What if we all said, okay, what are all of our graduation rates?
Mm-hmm.
What if we tried to ask what's working on one campus that might work on another? And so those were very, I thought, exciting discussions, because they're not essentially competitive. The truth is, we don't need to compete so much. We have so many students that the workforce needs that we just all need to be operating at full capacity. So let's not worry about that right now, but let's worry about how we all succeed better. Because if we're succeeding, our students are succeeding, and then the state of Wisconsin is succeeding. So I won't say that it was, you know, absolutely smooth. Sometimes college presidents can be a little strange. I don't know about what you think, Chancellor Ford, but, we're all different. But those were good conversations. And I really want to thank Chancellor Mone from UW-Milwaukee, mm-hmm. who's done an excellent job facilitating these conversations. First, to recognize that too many meetings were happening around M7 that had a lot of presidents invited that not everyone could attend. And so it was losing traction. And he said, what if we just had one that really tried to ask all the questions together?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the origin of it that I saw. And so I'd never seen something like that. but I did agree with him that there were too many meetings.
Yes.
So it was interesting to watch that evolution.
And so I'm not going to agree that we're strange, but I'm going to say that we are passionate about our institutions, right? And so when you bring us together and it's like, you want us to you really want us to collaborate, right? And but we also have that healthy sense of competition. So I think that drives some of our the questioning that we're doing and thinking about how this fits with our institution and how do I take this back to my respective campus in order to get the buy-in, because we have to have our campus engaged in the Higher Ed Regional Alliance. It can't just be the president sitting around a table and agreeing and hoping that all this occurs. It's really mm-hmm. going to take the integration at the campus level. The other thing I think that is going to happen as a result of the Higher Ed Regional Alliance is that it will be easier for folks to engage with us. They're going to be able to work with and get information to 18 campuses rather than right now they work with maybe the one they attended or a family member attended or they have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people being left out, and particularly as smaller institutions, mm-hmm. UW-Parkside and Carthage, sometimes we're left out. Well, we may have just the academic program that aligns with a particular partner, and now we're going to be able to have that all at the same time. And so I think communication will improve mm-hmm. and alignment will improve. And that's one of the ultimate goals as well.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit more about each of you. We found out that, well, college presidents may be weird, but
strange. Strange. The word.
Strange. Chancellors are...
No, chancellors are not weird. I didn't say that. No, I just spoke for myself.
Right. President Swall, your academic background is in mathematics and English literature, two disciplines that on the surface, you know, maybe seem a little bit different, right? How did you become interested in those two areas?
So I was passionate, is the right word, about math from an early age, and for some reason just started to get ahead doing more workbooks in my kindergarten class than other folks. So that was always there. I mean, I can't remember not being interested in math. Mm. And then later I became interested in literature, and particularly in college. It was kind of a place where that was really celebrated along literary legacy. And frankly, I had a hard time making up my mind about which one I wanted to spend more time on after graduating from college. Mm. I spent a lot of time my junior year worrying about this. And then finally decided that I would go on in math. But then when I got my first teaching job at Davidson College in North Carolina, I noticed they had an interdisciplinary program for first and second year students called a humanities program. And so over time, I was able to join that and get back to teaching some literature and grading some papers. Mm-hmm. I find it just, I don't think of it as strange. Maybe I don't call myself strange in this way. It's just part of who I am. And when people say, well, what does that mean? I'd say that the math part, people often say, oh, you're great with numbers, and I'm fine with numbers. But to be a mathematician is to think a lot about systems and how they all fit together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are a lot of complicated systems in the world. And the English part, yes, it can be good for writing an academic essay, and it's great for appreciating literature, but it's really about people. It's about empathy. It's about understanding situation and stories. Mm-hmm. And so... frankly, it seems like a pretty good preparation for leading an institution where there are a whole bunch of systems working together or not, and there are a whole bunch of people working together or not, and how to improve both of those at the same time.
So I have a question for John on that. So it's how you describe the story in your own academic path, and that there was this sense of, I got to make a decision in my junior year. And so now that as a leader at Carthage College and a leader in higher education, what advice would you give to a student today that is at this crossroads where they have these passions that sometimes don't necessarily connect, they don't appear to connect on the surface?
Right.
What advice would you give them?
So it's a big, wonderful world out there, and there are lots of opportunities that will come to you over your lifetime. So it may be that at certain points you need to pick one or two things to focus on, and that may lead to what the next position will be. I was able to major in two things, but I don't know anyone who can go to graduate school in math and English at the same time, or at least I wasn't willing to attempt that. And so I committed to finish a degree in math after college. Mm-hmm. But I was frankly looking for ways in which that other part of me could come back and be part of how I lived my life and what was important to me. And I think that's true in lots of ways. You know, that first job that you were talking about, I mean, we do prepare students so that they can have a first job and have a rewarding first job. But much of what's going to have them be successful economically but also personally and find a rewarding life is how they're able to integrate more things over the course of their career. Some of those things will have started in college and other courses. And so they have an opportunity for all those things to flow together later on.
Yeah. And I thank you for sharing, because I just think it's so important that we keep a strong focus within our institutions of that opportunity to explore, mm-hmm. and to explore the passions and to create new areas of interest. And I think that's what a college and university education is all about. Mm-hmm. It is much beyond having just that first job, mm-hmm. Right. And that piece of paper that says you've earned your degree. It's really all the experiences that occur, and I think that's why I love doing this work.
Mm-hmm. And Chancellor Ford, I want to ask you about your academic background, but before I do, I want to go back a second to another, what I found interesting was that you began your college experience at the age of 15, correct?
Correct.
And does that, starting as a younger person, in, you know, saying most 15-year-olds are not starting their college or university career, and the academic disciplines being maybe not ones that you would put together, do you think that gives you a perspective when you're dealing with students now as a leader at Carthage College, in that you were a younger person, you had to adapt to that environment, mathematics, English literature? I would think that allows you to see different students in kind of where they're at.
Yes. So for me, it's an example of how the systems we build may not be right for all students. So I think we tend to design things as if there's kind of one student in mind. Mm-hmm. And the truth is there are many, many different students who come from different backgrounds, and they have different passions and different interests. And so in my case, the age was off. Mm-hmm. I was ready in some ways and less ready in others. And so I have a lot of empathy for students who come from different backgrounds and ask, why are things set up this way? Why couldn't I do X, Y, or Z? And I'll say that I'm particularly empathetic because before I went to college and sort of got to socially start over at 15, my high school experience was absolutely miserable. So I was just that guy who had skipped grades. So I've come a long way since then. I can actually talk to other people and things like that. When students feel like they're not fitting for a variety of reasons,
right.
It's not them so much. It's the rest of the environment that we create. And so that's what I empathize with.
Yeah, interesting. And Chancellor Ford, your academic background is in guidance and counseling. Do you think back on your undergraduate experience when you're dealing today with students, with your colleagues, with people in the community? What is that? How do you draw on what you experienced back then as an undergraduate?
Well, I certainly think back to that a lot, because as a first-generation college student, and I remember selecting the University of Louisville with the idea that I would transfer to the University of Kentucky one day. Mm-hmm. And because I knew more about the University of Kentucky, but when I got to the University of Louisville, I fell in love with it. But I always wanted to be a physician. And if I could have been a physician, I would have been a pediatrician, because I loved working with children. But I didn't like college chemistry. I passed. It was college calculus that got me, and really didn't like that. But I knew that I needed to change, and just it wasn't the right fit, and used some of the resources on campus. And again, resources that I can tell students today that I used as an undergraduate, and know that they're important to help them work through these areas of where the structures don't fit them. Mm-hmm. And discovered that I could do counseling and guidance. And even though I did not practice as a counselor per se, and I knew I didn't want to go into K-12 counseling, that was not what I wanted to do. Mm. But I used those skills every day. And I think one of the most important skills that I use as a leader is listening. And that the counseling background gives me that opportunity to really listen and learn, because I think that is key to leadership today. The other part for me is I had the opportunity then to go on and get my advanced degrees in College Student Personnel Administration and Higher Ed Administration, so learning a lot about the academy. And I think the other part is it was the undergraduate experiences that really define who I am, mm-hmm. and the opportunities and the mentors and the colleagues and the friends, both in class and out of class. And I think that's why my focus here at UW-Parkside is to make sure that all of our students have those opportunities inside and outside of the classroom.
The region is fortunate to have two institutions like Carthage College and UW-Parkside. The region is fortunate to have leaders like yourselves, Carthage College President John Swallow and University of Wisconsin Parkside Chancellor Debbie Ford. Thank you for your time and your insights, and it has been a pleasure to have you on Parkside today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.